In a few moments, Governor Scott Walker will make his way into the Assembly chambers. He will address the full legislature, the Supreme Court, and his cabinet. Good evening. I'm Zach Schultz from Wisconsin Public Television.
And I'm Sean Johnson from Wisconsin Public Radio. We're about to hear Governor Scott Walker's third State of the State address at a time when the recalls are in the past and the word bipartisanship is ringing through these halls.
And for the past couple months, we've heard Governor Walker tour around the state talking about his plans to reform education, help create more private sector jobs, and reform government. Now, the next couple of months will be busy with the governor's budget address coming in mid-February and spring elections for a seat on Wisconsin Supreme Court and the state superintendent of public instruction. For total coverage, go to wisconsinvote.org. And you can always get the latest information, including a replay of tonight's State of the State.
And we heard a little bit of a preview of the governor's State of the State address last week when he spoke to the Wisconsin Bankers Association. He told the bankers that he was going to be calling for an income tax cut and told reporters afterward that hinted that it could be something that is phased in gradually over time. The governor said he'd be talking more about that tonight.
Yeah, and Democrats have their own ideas on how they're going to spark the economy and where any additional revenue would go in their minds. And we'll hear about that in the Democratic response to the governor's speech. That'll be given tonight by the new Senate Minority Leader, Chris Larson, from Milwaukee.
And if the governor's first two State of the State addresses were any kind of blueprint for this one, you're probably not going to hear a whole lot of specifics tonight. It's going to be a speech where he kind of lays out what he sees as his accomplishments and talks broadly about his agenda in time ahead. We know that the governor's going to be talking, as far as that agenda goes, about his what he sees the state should be doing for moving the economy forward.
Yeah, that'll be his main focus tonight. He is actually in the area. He's ready to go in. The senators are in the assembly parlor. As you can see, they've just seated, so there's a few more introductions to be done, and this speech will be underway in probably a few moments. But one of the things that's interesting about this speech is Governor Walker writes his own speech. He's very focused on what he says when he addresses the state, and he always tries to give a mention to the state constitution in there. He considers himself something of a constitutional scholar, so see if, listening at home, if you can pick out the constitutional reference in the speech.
Yeah, and you're any moment now, you're going to see the doors and the back of the assembly come open, and as the governor walks out, you'll hear the place erupt with applause. The legislature currently controlled by his fellow Republicans, big majority in the assembly, and a majority in the state Senate. And
the governor, that was the assembly sergeant-at-arms introducing the governor. That's the custom here. Every visitor from another chamber has to be formally introduced by the sergeant-at-arms and welcomed to the floor, and a rousing applause as he goes up and down the aisle. Now, the aisle is split with Republicans on one side and Democrats on the other, so these are some bipartisan handshakes going on here. And that's part of the goal of this session among a lot of legislative leaders, is to find some new spirit of bipartisanship after that contentious last 2 years.
Yeah, it's not something that Republicans have to do, and a couple months from now, we'll check back in and see if it's going as well as it did in the first week. I think you got the sense from lawmakers from both parties that they're a little bit exhausted from last session, which was just the most contentious, and certainly in recent memory. But, the governor could be talking about some potentially contentious topics in his budget address coming up soon. We'll see if he gets into doing that tonight.
Yeah, and both sides know there will be contentious issues. They won't agree. They're just hoping the process is a little more equal in the sense in that there's not as much yelling back and forth. Now, the governor's walking up. He's shaking hands with the Senate president and some of the other representatives, and he's going to be giving a speech shortly.
The governor of the state of Wisconsin, Scott Walker.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Speaker Boss, President Pro Tem Cramer, President Ellis, Majority Leader Fitzgerald, Minority Leader Larson, Minority Leader Barca, members of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, constitutional officers, tribal leaders, members of my cabinet, distinguished guests, members of the legislature, most importantly, good evening to the great fellow citizens of this great state, the state of Wisconsin. It is my honor to speak before you tonight. Before we get started, I would like to introduce the First Lady of Wisconsin, my wife, Toinette, who's up in the gallery. Next to Toinette are our two sons, Matt and Alex. They changed quick. Matt came over from college right after his last class, and Alex came over after his day as a senior at Wauwatosa's High School. And next to them are my parents, Lou and Pat Walker, who are right there as well. And right next to them is my brother David, my sister-in-law Maria, and the two most beautiful girls in the world here tonight, my nieces Isabella and Eva. Now, if I introduce any more walkers, my boys are going to be upset with missing the first ball in the Wisconsin game. So I'm not going to introduce any more of our family, but I do want to introduce the Adjutant General of the great state of Wisconsin, Dunn Dunbar, and thank him on behalf of the 10,000 strong men and women of the Wisconsin National Guard. Thank you to you, and thank you to each of them as well. Ladies and gentlemen, we are moving Wisconsin forward with bold vision and bright hope for the future. 2 years ago, when I first stood here as your new governor, Wisconsin was facing a $3.6 billion budget deficit. Property taxes had gone up 27% over the previous decade, increasing every year, and the unemployment rate was 7.8%. Today, Wisconsin has a $342 million budget surplus. Property taxes on a median-valued home went down in each of the last 2 years, and the unemployment rate, well, it's down to 6.7%. We're turning things around. We're heading in the right direction. We're moving Wisconsin forward. And unlike other states, we avoided significant tax increases, massive layoffs, and cuts in programs like Medicaid. Instead, we put in place long-term structural reforms that helped us balance state and local government budgets for years to come. What we did was think more about the next generation than we did about the next election, and it worked. For the first time in our state's history, we set money aside in two consecutive years for the Rainy Day Fund. Our bond rating is solid, and our pension system is the only one in the country that is fully funded. We made tough but prudent decisions to get our fiscal house in order. Today, unlike the federal government and many of our neighboring states, we have a surplus
which will allow us to invest in our priorities. With the introduction of my proposed budget next month, I will lay out a clear plan for reducing the burden on hardworking families by lowering income taxes on the middle class. We want to continue to put more money in the hands of the hardworking taxpayers and small business owners of this state. Unlike the message coming out of Washington, I believe that putting more money in the hands of the people instead of the government is good for the economy. Helping the people of Wisconsin create more jobs is my number one priority. During the 3 years before I took office, our state lost nearly 150,000 jobs. At the low point, unemployment topped 9%. Soon after taking office, I called the legislature into a special session on jobs, and we enacted some of the most aggressive plans in the country. Today, the unemployment rate has dropped to 6.7%. New business ventures are up nearly 11%, and we've changed the opinion of our employers for the better. In 2010, a mere 10% of the employers surveyed said that our state was headed in the right direction. In 2012, 93% said Wisconsin was heading in the right direction. Over the past 2 years, Wisconsin moved up 21 spots on Chief Executive's ranking of the best and worst states for business. CNBC moved us up to number 17, and Site Selection magazine ranked our state as high as 13. Employers feel good about our state. During the past year, Kohl's Department Store worked with us and announced the creation of 3,000 new jobs. Plexus in Neenah is adding 350 jobs, and Alliance Laundry Systems in Ripon is adding another 270 jobs. While big announcements like this are great, we're just as excited about companies like Newski's Meat Products in Wittburg adding 21 jobs, Poclain Hydraulics in Sturtevant adding 50 jobs, and Premium Waters in Chippewa Falls adding 21 jobs. Small business owners in particular want certainty, and we have dramatically improved the business climate in our state. We're turning things around. We're heading in the right direction. We're moving Wisconsin forward. Still, there's much more work to be done in the coming year. Our top priority is helping the people of our state create more jobs. As you know, we have an ambitious goal, 250,000 jobs by 2015. After all that we've gone through in Wisconsin over the past few years, some have suggested this goal is too difficult to reach. With the protests and recalls, combined with the slow recovery at the national level, the fiscal cliff, and ongoing worries about health care mandates coming out of Washington, they say there are plenty of reasons why it has been hard to create jobs. But in Wisconsin, we don't make excuses. We get results. With this in mind, we're going to double down and be even more aggressive with our efforts to improve the jobs climate in this state. That's what I heard during my listening sessions held around Wisconsin. People want us focused on things that will improve the economy and our way of life. That's why I've laid out 5 very clear priorities for the next 2 years. Create jobs, develop the workforce, transform education, reform government, and invest in our infrastructure. And it's also why I've asked the members of this legislature to stay focused on these same priorities and not get distracted on other issues. One of the best ways we can show the people of Wisconsin that their state government is focused on jobs is to pass a bill that streamlines the process for safe and environmentally sound mining. Start with the legislation that was approved in the Joint Finance Committee last session. include some reasonable modifications, and send me a bill to sign into law early this year. A mine would be a lifeline to people in northwestern Wisconsin, where the unemployment rate in Iron County is the second highest in the state at nearly 12%. But the benefits would be felt all across Wisconsin. We have the potential for $1.5 billion investment here in our state that could lead to as many as 3,000 construction-related jobs and 2,800 long-term jobs. It's no wonder I've heard from people in places like Clinton and Wausau, Green Bay and Prairie du Chien, Superior and Chippewa Falls, all who want us to get this bill passed. We need to get things started on this project as soon as possible. Tonight, please join me in welcoming a number of people who really want to get to work. Joining me are Josh Dennis, Larry Youngs, Cindy LaFortune, Carl Kroll, Richard Grelunar, Kurt Lasua, Adam Casino, Steve Anderson, Harold Wickman, Ryan Haffenbeth. These operating engineers are members of Local 139 who are looking for work. Also joining us tonight are carpenters and millwrights from Northern Wisconsin locals of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters. Please welcome Dana Totelli, Bob Polkinchek, Charlie Steed, Al Ida, Dan Gillespie, Pete Lugreck, David Grokey, and Jim Behrens. Together, they're holding a flag of the great state of Wisconsin. As you can see, on the right-hand side is the image of a miner. In the upper right-hand corner of the shield are the tools of a miner. And on the top of the shield, underneath our motto forward, is a badger, which comes from the nickname that was given to early settlers who were miners. If there's any state that can move forward with a way to streamline the process for safe and environmentally sound mining, shouldn't it be the Badger State? Thanks for coming out. From the mining bill to mining for jobs. Early this year, I spoke with Carrie Frank, the CEO of a company called Comply 365. Her business was located in Illinois, but she was looking for a new headquarters where they could expand and grow. Carrie told me she liked how we're running things here in Wisconsin, and it was one of the big factors in her choice to move her company to Beloit. Even more exciting is, since moving here in September, Carrie has hired 7 more employees. Carrie, thank you for being here tonight, and thank you for being a partner in job growth. Now, while recruiting employers from Illinois is almost as exciting as beating the Bears, most new jobs are going to come from new businesses created here or from small businesses growing in our state. We need to help them tap into the capital they need to make investments that will lead to more jobs. During the coming year, I look forward to working with lawmakers in both parties on ways to improve the amount of investment capital available to help startups and other small businesses grow new jobs in our state. Now, in addition to access to capital, we want to help small businesses grow by lowering the cost of doing business in our state. In particular, we want to streamline the process so what we do enforce is about common sense and not about bureaucratic red tape. You may remember last year I called for state agencies to work with the reformed Small Business Regulatory Review Board to identify unnecessary, obsolete, and burdensome regulations. In a survey, we ask employers what we can do to help them create jobs in the upcoming year, and the most common answer was decrease the amount of state regulations. And they gave us plenty of feedback on the rules to review. Tonight, I am pleased to release this report, which identifies over 300 rule modifications in 218 administrative code chapters. Making these changes will make it easier to do business in the state while maintaining the safety and health of our citizens. Speaker Voss has also made this a priority, and I look forward, and my administration does as well, to working with him and all the other members of this legislature to improve our state's regulatory climate. While our number one priority is helping people create jobs, our next priority is filling those jobs with qualified workers. One of the strengths of doing business in Wisconsin is the work ethic of our people. Moving forward, we need enough skilled workers ready to fill the jobs open today, as well as those that will be open tomorrow and in the years to come. Survey after survey shows a tremendous need for skilled workers in key clusters like manufacturing, healthcare, information technology, even in accounting and finance. My frequent visits to employers across the state affirm these reports. Our state needs a way to accurately measure employment on a real-time basis. We need a better way to quickly measure trends and identify workforce needs by region. So we're working with members of the legislature to enact a system to help us connect workers to jobs in areas of great need from current and future employers. During the past year, we partnered with the Wisconsin Covenant Foundation to provide grants to technical colleges, employers in various regions to improve workforce development. The next step will come in the state budget as we align new resources with our critical needs in the workplace. Just a few days ago, we graduated the first class under the Wisconsin Workforce Partnership Program. Diane Stepp joined the program because she was unemployed after having been laid off and was looking for a new career. Diane has already been hired by the Ameriquip Corporation in New Holstein as a CNC operator, and she started work literally yesterday. Diane is with us here tonight. Diane, congratulations to you and your fellow classmates. We also worked with the University of Wisconsin system on a new flexible degree program called UW Flex Option to help adult learners earn degrees in targeted fields. Nearly a quarter of all adults in the state have some college credit without a degree. For many, time and money are the barriers to finishing that degree. I can relate. During my senior year at Marquette University, I was offered a full-time job at the American Red Cross. I thought I'd squeeze in a course here or there and finish things off in a year or two. But then Tonette and I got married. Then we had Matt. And then came Alex. Next thing you know, you're putting all your extra time and money into your kids. And the UW Flex option will provide a less time-consuming, less costly way to help people finish off a degree. We'll help prepare more people to fill the critical needs we have in the workforce. I want to thank UW System President Kevin Riley and UW Colleges and UW Extension Chancellor Ray Cross for leading the charge on this exciting idea. Now, part of the long-term strategy to develop our workforce is to continue to transform education in our state. The reforms we enacted over the past 2 years saved school districts hundreds of millions of dollars and allowed each district to hire based on merit and pay based on performance. We now can put the best and the brightest in our classrooms, and we can pay them to stay there. We finally have a way to recognize our exceptional teachers and reward them for the good work they do with our children. Going forward, our educational efforts must be focused on performance. During the past year, State Superintendent Evers and I put together a diverse group of stakeholders from around Wisconsin, teachers, parents, school board members, taxpayers, business leaders, and others, to talk about school and school district accountability. After a lengthy process, the first report card evaluating each school in the state was released at the start of the school year. As many of you know, Tonette and I still have a son at Wauwatosa East High School. And like many parents, we looked at the score for Alex's school. In fact, our district actually put the scores for all of their schools right on the front of their newsletter. That tells me we were able to develop a transparent and objective system for measuring performance in education. In our budget, we will lay out plans to provide a financial incentive for high-performing and rapidly improving schools. We want to reward and replicate success all across the state. At the same time, we will outline a plan to help failing schools fundamentally change their structure and dramatically improve their results. Our goal is to help each school excel so every child in the state, every child has access to a great education. As a parent, that's really a moral imperative. And as your governor, it's also an economic imperative. If we want to help employers grow here in Wisconsin, we must show them there is a steady supply of graduates with the skills needed to fill the jobs, not only of today, but of tomorrow. We worked hard over the past year to improve education, particularly in reading. Funds in my last budget provided reading screeners to assess kids as they come into kindergarten. Now, this is tremendously important, as research shows kids learn to read through third grade and then read to learn for the rest of their lives. We also put in place a series of other important reforms to improve our early childhood and elementary school reading skills. One of the other great ways to help improve reading skills is by increasing the number of people who read to our kids. Last year, I challenged all of us to mentor a child as a reading buddy. Now, I know we all cherish those times when we could read to our young children. In my case, with those days past, I partnered with a school in Milwaukee to read with a third grader. Stacy and her family are with us here tonight. Stacy continues to do a great job in school. At the start of this school year, I paired up with another third grader, Angelo. Angelo and his family are here tonight as well. Stacy and Angelo. Again, this year, I challenge each of you to join with me and find some time to mentor a student in reading. Now, every child should have access to great education. We continue to expand the number of choices for families in Wisconsin, be it at a traditional, a charter, a voucher, a virtual, or a homeschool environment. Moving forward, we want to continue to dramatically improve existing schools and give parents the opportunity to choose legitimate alternatives to failing schools. In addition to transforming education, we must continue to reform government. Take the Waste, Fraud, and Abuse Commission, for example. So far, they've identified nearly $456 million worth of savings. Our reforms allow state government to focus on efficiency so taxpayers get great service without needless spending and waste. Our reforms also give schools and local governments flexibility to make management choices to improve their communities while saving money. For example, our technical schools are saving millions of dollars by making simple, common sense changes to instructor schedules and overtime policies. In Racine County, they're saving money with a program that allows nonviolent jail inmates to do maintenance work, like mowing grass and shoveling snow. And much of the work being done to save taxpayers' money is about finding creative solutions to problems faced by the state. Several years ago, the previous governor closed welcome centers. As a candidate, I highlighted the importance of the tourism industry and pledged to reopen these centers. Tonight, I'm happy to report that there are now 8 Travel Wisconsin Welcome Centers staffed with people that direct visitors to the many exciting attractions all across our great state. The Department of Tourism worked with the Department of Transportation and local chambers and visitors bureaus to form a tremendous partnership that protects state taxpayers in this effort. With me tonight are a number of our dynamic Travel Wisconsin greeters who provide a warm welcome to all of our visitors. This is just part of the team out there, but you can see it's no wonder tourism has grown to a $16 billion industry, supporting 1 in 13 jobs in our state. Thanks, guys. See, they're even enthusiastic up here. I love it. Now, tourism is one of our many industries that benefit from a strong transportation or infrastructure system. We need to continue to invest in it to keep people working right here in Wisconsin. With this in mind, I'm committed to a healthy transportation system that includes roads, bridges, freight rail, ports, and airports. Whether traveling to a tourism destination or taking product to and from market, so many of our key industries, manufacturing, dairy products, timber and paper products, cranberries, vegetables, grain, sand, and soon iron ore mining. So many of these industries depend on our strong transportation backbone. They needed to keep their competitive edge. The Miller Coors Brewery in Milwaukee is a good example. The plant manager told us that Miller Coors is in a hyper-competitive industry. Every day they're looking to find a competitive advantage to see who can get a cold beer on a bar here in Madison or Green Bay or even Chicago the fastest. Beer trucks are tied up in the zoo interchange. The Miller Coors Brewery here in Wisconsin is at a disadvantage. In a similar way, a dairy farmer from Independence or a lumber company from Antigo, a crop farmer from Dodgeville, or even a dock worker from Superior, all are at a competitive advantage if we have a good transportation system. That's why I'm committed to improving our infrastructure. Now, in addition to investments in our transportation system, we need to ensure we have access to cost-effective and reliable sources of power, preserve our clean water advantage, improve availability of high-speed internet connections, and support our quality health care here in Wisconsin. Tonight, I invite all of you here and all of you watching at home to join us as we continue our work to move our great state forward. Next month, I will lay out a clear plan for how to achieve these priorities when I present our biennial budget to this state legislature. Unlike the deficit we faced 2 years ago, we start out in a much better position today because of the tough but important decisions we made over the past 2 years. In many ways, our position in Wisconsin is a stark contrast to the chaos in Washington, D.C. While many of our nation's leaders failed to make tough decisions, we decided to avoid failure by embracing true reform. Still, there is much more work to be done. As I traveled the state, it is clear to me why our focus on creating 250,000 jobs by 2015 is about much more than just fulfilling a campaign promise. Simply put, it's about helping improve the lives of 250,000 more families in Wisconsin. You see, adding a new job is about more than just a number. Every time another job is created and a new employee is hired, it means that another family has someone working in their household. For many, that means fewer worries about putting bread on the table or clothes in the backs of their kids or even making the mortgage payment on the house. I will work hard each and every day so we can help people all across Wisconsin have the chance to have a job and work hard to support themselves and their families for generations to come. With bold vision and bright hope for the future, we are turning things around. We are heading in the right direction. We are moving Wisconsin forward. Thank you. God bless you, and may God bless the great state of Wisconsin.
And so Governor Scott Walker concludes his third State of the State address. And Sean, one of the things that jumped out at me from that speech was the emphasis on mining. We knew that bill would be important, but bringing up the miners, bringing them up with the flag, pointing out the emblems. He's talked about the flag before, but nothing hits home like visual props during a speech like this.
Yeah, I mean, for the benefit of our radio audience there, he had several miners equipped with hard hats and all. Come up, stand behind him. And so to put that bill front and center in the way that he did, just echoes what you've heard from legislative leaders recently, that Republican leaders, that that's going to be their number one bill out of the chute.
And I thought it was interesting how it tied in with one of the other lines that he had in his speech about not getting distracted with other legislation that could be contentious or divisive. He wanted to focus on legislation that helped create jobs, and that ties into those union workers up there. Is the number one bill that Republicans have promised that they will not pass this year is Right to Work, which would a lot of the private unions are very much opposed to, but it's a Republican issue across the country. And by bringing up those private union members and having them involved in the push for the mining bill and then saying we will not be distracted, I think that ties into a lot of his agenda about not getting distracted and focusing on jobs.
Yeah, I mean, you can imagine this place would have a very different character to it right now if we were in the middle of a right-to-work debate, because, we saw what happened in Michigan there. We saw what happened in Wisconsin a couple of years ago. We're not having that. We even had had some empty seats in the Assembly Gallery for an annual speech, the State of the State. So, you know, that's an unusual thing to see at what's an annual ritual here.
And one of the other things that came out in the speech is he talked about investing in priorities. There could be some surplus revenue in this next budget. At the very least, there is enough money to pay our bills without having to do some other big things. And one of the things he talked about is tax cuts, and he said we want to invest in our priorities. Now, if you talk to some Democrats, tax cuts are not their priorities. So the definition of our, we don't know how inclusive that is, but tax cuts fits definitely the Republican investment idea.
Yeah, and how he wants to pay for that is really going to set up the debates that we're going to be having for the next several months, because that's going to be some serious value judgments there, as he prioritizes one thing and, you know, maybe deprioritizes some others. And we are going to go soon here to the minority response from State Senator Chris Larson of Milwaukee, who was chosen by his peers to lead the Senate Democrats in the upcoming legislative session. And as we prepare for that, we mentioned at the outset of the speech that this likely would not be heavy on specifics. I think it pretty much bore that out. You heard the governor mention some of his big items, the income tax cut. You didn't hear details on that. You heard him talk about prioritizing a transportation system. You didn't hear details on that. That's all the kind of stuff that you're going to hear in his budget address in about a month.
And so now we'll get the response from Democratic Minority Leader in the Senate, Chris Larson. Tonight, we should be honest with the people of Wisconsin. You just heard calls for bipartisanship from the governor. The policies he proposed were not bipartisan. Funding an unproven, unaccountable gamble with our children's future is not bipartisan. Forcing through an extreme mining bill that will take at least 7 years to create jobs is not bipartisan. And giving tax breaks to those making over $200,000 a year at the expense of our schools is not bipartisan. Wisconsin Democrats are ready to do the people's work, and we urge our Republican colleagues to join us in our efforts to help the middle class. From jobs to education to transparency and accountability, we have plenty of common sense solutions we can all agree upon to improve the lives of our families, friends, and neighbors. Now, last session, after our governor and his allies put special interests ahead of everyday Wisconsinites, we experienced a dark cloud of divisiveness. This session, with control once again of every facet of our state's government, our governor and Wisconsin Republicans have the opportunity to change their tune from one of extremism to one of bipartisanship. While the rest of the country is moving forward by adding jobs and increasing the pace of economic development, the governor's failing policies have left us floundering and unable to progress. Despite jobs numbers improving nationally over the last 34 months, Wisconsin has stumbled, losing jobs during 11 of the last 24 months. Additionally, Wisconsin lags behind the country in overall job creation, adding only 38,000 jobs during 2011 and 2012, and far behind the pace that this governor promised during his campaign. Just last week, the Bureau of Labor Statistics confirmed Wisconsin had the lowest job creation rate in the Midwest and tied 42nd nationally. Wisconsin's working families are depending on us to put immediate job creation efforts first. Creating more jobs in our state requires that we invest in our next generation of workers to ensure that they have the necessary skills for the jobs currently available. Today, Wisconsin has a skills gap, leaving 35,000 existing jobs unfilled despite high unemployment. Now, much of this disconnect between need and ability is directly linked to the record cuts to education at all levels by this governor and Republicans. This past session, we saw over $1 billion in cuts to our neighborhood K-12 schools, local technical colleges, and state universities, causing Wisconsin to fall within the top five states for cutting education spending per pupil. Now, it's our challenge to fully restore 100% the devastating cuts to education and to invest those dollars in Superintendent Evers' Fair Funding for Our Future proposal. If we prioritize investment in education, we will help Wisconsin fill these 35,000 jobs almost overnight. If Wisconsin is going to be pro-jobs, we must be pro-education first. Family, friends, and neighbors across Wisconsin are pinching pennies and reevaluating their financial choices. We must be prepared to do the same. With a shrinking general fund, it's time to open the curtains and shed sunlight on all government spending. the repeated catastrophic failure of oversight in the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation provide the most obvious example of what happens when accountability and transparency measures are cast aside. After being entrusted with $85 million in taxpayer funds without a rule book, we saw the WEDC circumvent our fair and competitive bidding process and lose track of $50 million in loans, including $12 million that are now overdue. We can't afford to double down on failing programs like the WEDC, which have become sad examples for other states to avoid. Now, the Wisconsin way has historically meant working together with all neighbors in a bipartisan way, as no single party has a monopoly on good ideas. If we're willing to sit down and have an honest conversation, we can easily resolve even the toughest problems. Tackling these important issues will help repair the existing partisan divide to bring us closer together as Wisconsin neighbors.
That was Chris Larson, the State Senate Democratic Minority Leader.
And we'll be back in mid-February when Governor Walker proposes his two-year budget. That's when we'll hear the details on Governor Walker's budget. And, Sean, hopefully that'll include specific numbers on that proposed tax cut for the middle class.
Yeah, and we've heard the governor speak for months now broadly about his top priorities that include reforming government and a strong transportation system. And it's in that budget where we'll know exactly what the governor means.